Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Did you ever wonder what was going on in Cyndi Lauper's life when she wrote Time After Time? Every hit song, at least the ones that go deeper than I Just Want to Party, has a story to tell. And that's where Mark Myers comes in. Myers has interviewed dozens of legendary artists, as well as their collaborators and producers and engineers, to get the real story behind their hit music, all the way from Cyndi Lauper, but also the Rolling Stones, Elvis Presley, Blondie, you name it. Well, now, Mark Myers has compiled a list of dozens of these tales in a new book. It's called Anatomy of a Song, The Oral History of 45 Iconic Hits That Changed Rock, R&B, and Pop. We picked a few to talk about with Mark, and we started off with Tammy Wynette's Stand By Your Man. It was a ballad that came to be interpreted as an answer to women's liberation, although that was never Tammy Wynette's intention.
Tammy never meant it that way. The way she meant it originally was, as Billy Sherrill told me, was as if she were giving advice to another woman trying to hold on to her man. There was no statement about the cosmology at all. She was simply expressing advice to another woman on how to hang on to a guy she really loved. The whole furor came about when Epic Records decided to run a full-page ad that simply said Tammy Wynette's answer to women's lib. She had nothing to do with that. It was a marketing gag by Epic. And that's how it wound up as sort of being this reactionary, old-fashioned, out-of-sync way to hang on to men.
All right, Mark Myers, here's an iconic song that we chose because I think there might even be some similarities, at least to the spirit of Stand By Your Man that we just talked about.
He's me. Said he's going back to a simpler place and time.
Mark Myers, that's Gladys Knight and the Pips. I've never been able to hear that song come on without kind of stopping what I'm doing and listening. But this song is about a woman who quits her life because a guy couldn't cut it in L.A. And she kind of stands by her man in a way.
Yeah, what's fascinating is that it's coming through a woman's voice, so that perspective is stark. But this was not originally a woman who wrote it, and it wasn't originally for a woman's voice. Jim Weatherly, the songwriter, wrote it as a country ballad that he recorded first. And then his manager sent out his album of songs to high-profile singers, hoping they would pick it up and turn it into a hit. And the first artist who grabbed it in 1972 is Cissy Houston. It was originally a Midnight Plane to Houston, but she wanted to change it to Midnight Train to Georgia. And what she said to him is, look, my folks aren't from Houston. They're from Georgia. And we don't take planes. We take trains. And he said, fine.
It just wouldn't have worked as, Pan Am Flight 708 to Houston. You know?
Yeah.
All right, I want people to sort of reset their minds here, cleanse your palate. We're going across the Atlantic. This is a different feel, a different sound. Brace yourself. This is the heavy riff. This is Zeppelin.
Way down inside, honey, you need it. I'm gonna give you my love. I'm gonna give you my love. Oh, want a whole lot of love.
Jimmy Page revolutionized rock and roll with that heavy riff, that repetitious heavy guitar sound. Nobody had ever really done it before. That's on display here. What's going on with Whole Lotta Love?
You know, he did. He actually was inspired by rockabilly. He wanted to open that with a big rockabilly-like opening, which is, you know, what he was most captured by in terms of American music. But they really detested AM radio. AM radio, they felt, was the children's table at this point. FM radio had already come on air in a big way in 68. And Page simply did not want to see his music carved down to slider-sized songs. He wanted full canvas, big canvas recordings for albums with his work. But what happens is that they record it. They record as long as they possibly can on a song like this. And the record company issues it at about 5 minutes initially. But Then they decide to bring it down to about 3 minutes and 21 seconds. And Page said he told me he listened to it once and never listened to it again. He hated it.
All right, let's stay in London. Let's get the Clash.
The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going thin. Engines stop running, but I have no fear. Cause London is drowning, I live by the river.
That's the great Joe Strummer there, of course, lead man for the Clash. Mark Myers, I love punk. I love music with something to say. I love the history of social conflict in London and in New York that led to punk. But I was shocked in your book to read that the real thing that these guys were afraid of when they wrote this song was rising sea levels.
They were ahead of the curve when it comes to global warming. Joe Strummer lived down by the Thames River there, and they were terribly afraid that the Thames was going to back up and flood the city, which had been the case earlier. And this is before London put up those barriers to stop that from happening. The other thing that was in their favor is the change in politics there with Margaret Thatcher coming in 79. Punk, which had been backpedaling for a bit, sort of was played out by 1979, even in London. They realized that they could latch punk onto social commentary and become almost a protest band against economics and against the deterioration in London, which they did artfully.
All right, the Ramones went to London. They played some punk. They helped start a movement. They came back to New York. They played in CBGB in Manhattan, and they had a friend there who was also playing punk, and then she did something different that made a lot of her punk friends really mad. Her name is Debbie Harry. You know her as Blondie, and she did this.
Kids would come up and said, play that disco song. This is the first marriage of disco and punk in the 1970s. Then the song became Once I Had a Love by 1978. And when they start to record their album in 1978, Parallel Lines, the producer, Michael Chapman, he wants to find out how he can take this song and turn it into a really big hit. So he asks Debbie Harry, he says to her, who's your biggest influence vocally now? And she says, Donna Summer. So suddenly a light bulb goes off over Chapman's head to create this Giorgio Moroder Kraftwerk feel for this song called Once I Had a Love. He wants the name changed. They change it to Heart of Glass. You can hear Donna Summer in Debbie Harry's voice, that ooh, that's Donna Summer and I Feel Love.
Mark Myers is the author of Anatomy of a Song, the oral history of 45 iconic hits that changed rock, R&B, and pop. Mark Myers, thanks so much.
Beautiful to be here, Todd. Thank you.